Welcome to episode 4 of Media Impressions. January, a time to reflect, reset, and improve. It's no different for a media agency, but where to start? 2020 was a year of disruptions, and it's setting up 2021 to be a year of transformation, voluntary or otherwise. Transformation doesn't mean reinvention, though. As we look to the future, we continue to iterate on what's worked for us in the past. Media has always been about driving people to a point of sale. 2020 just moved even more of those sales online. For our first episode of the year, we explored how the nature of shopping is changing and how we adapt our offering even while embracing our heritage. Greg sat down with search manager Elias Shulgin and e-commerce manager Alex Mandel to discuss our new e-commerce service.
One of the things just to kind of point out to get to the elephant in the room here is Harmland's always been a great place to work. But as we're getting ready to do this, we find out yesterday that Harmland has actually been named one of the best places to work. And I can't help but notice that that happens just as you joined the company, Alex. So what is it about working with you that has made it such a great place to work?
Well, I actually submitted the survey myself 50 times so that we would end up getting the award. So I think that that's how my arrival has most impacted that.
What is e-com at Harmland today? You know, from when you walked through that door, the vision that you've been trying to put into place, how do you see it shaping the company that you're now part of?
I think at the highest level, the thing that I have discovered is that, you know, similar to how we talk about customers not really distinguishing in their minds between where an ad was placed for them, it's more so the content and what that ad is driving and that place in the customer's process. Very similar is that seamlessness now between the in-store experience and the online experience. Whatever benefits you get from in-store, typically being able to hold and see the product and visualize, you know, where it's going to go or what its use is, you now have an expectation to do that to your best ability online. And similarly, all the conveniences that you get from checking out online with buy now, pay later and paying with Face ID, you want those same sort of conveniences when you do have to get up and go to a store. So I think the most interesting thing for me is seeing the way that Harmland has transitioned from a traditional to a digital agency and blended those pieces and been fluid along with the change in the environment and thinking about the same fluidity between what the customers expect in distinguishing an online and in-customer experience and being able to tap into that past expertise and what we see with that trend and really lock into creating that frictionless customer journey, which if you do that, you know, do a little bit of marketing and your company will be successful.
So building on that, the transition piece and the fact that we're taking what's worked and we're building into what's going to work, right? Elias, you were kind of in the center of that as we were having the initial conversations about needing to develop this specialty and putting in place the resources to make it successful that led to Alex's hire. You know, you're in the middle of that conversation trying to understand what's our place in this? How do we work from what we've got? What was it like kind of putting those initial pieces in place so that we could launch this department?
Yeah, so I've been in Harmland about a year and a half. And when I came on, Janine Crossett and Nick Lynch already had, you know, kind of a lot of the initial ideas in place. And I think where that came from was just recognizing client need. You know, we had multiple clients that were selling on Amazon, clients that, you know, to Alex's point, wanted to be able to link their, you know, marketplace experience to the direct-to-consumer experience on their website. Each new person that came on board that had some pre-existing e-commerce experience, including Lawrence Donaldson, it was kind of just making those pieces fit into a cohesive team where each person kind of had their specialties. Alex and I have both worked, you know, in-house at retailers. Lawrence has worked on affiliate marketing, et cetera. And I think we were able to kind of turn that into a more cohesive whole over time. And there's been a lot of challenges, but I think Alex has really been instrumental in, you know, overcoming some of those initial challenges we had.
In your experiences, both here at Harmland and outside of it, do you find that it's more common to find those specialties where you know the ins and outs of e-com, or is it that you have this kind of cohesive unit where you draw and you blend with different departments across the company?
Well, I think there's a major distinction to be drawn between the way that an in-house department is typically built out and the way that an agency embraces e-commerce. So in my experience with in-house departments, there's a lot of specialization. So you'll have somebody with a very deep background in merchandising, buying, individuals that have e-commerce web development experience with, you know, shopping cart integrations, et cetera. When you look at kind of the agency landscape, and at least my personal experience with other agencies, it's a situation where people are wearing a lot of different hats and they typically don't specialize. So to get specific, you can say, you know, we have a strong SEO department at, you know, X agency in New York City, and that SEO department is capable of handling e-commerce clients. What we are trying to do at Harmelin is create that kind of in-house specialization at the agency level, where we know that we have SEO specialists, search specialists, social media specialists that understand what that landscape looks like if you're dealing with a large product catalog, if you're dealing with a brand that is wholesaling to marketplaces. There's just a lot of different challenges that you won't see with your typical agency-client relationship.
And so from your experience, Alex, how does that line up with what you were doing before and now what you're doing in the e-com department here at Harmelin?
You know, it's always a good thing to understand the perspective of the client, right? And I think sometimes agencies and clients butt heads over the agency concerned with increasing spend and the client concerned over margins. And those two things are going to butt heads because they're polar opposites. The lower your margins are performing, the less you are going to be willing to invest in advertising, especially on a platform where it might not be one of your top channels. So being able to come from running P&L on the brand side to coming into a scenario where we are not only enticing these clients to invest and test and learn, which is always more expensive up front, but also invest in our supporting all of those ventures. It's valuable to understand what their reluctance is going to be fueled by. To Elias's point, you have people who are running D2C and they are fulfilling dropship orders, and then you have others who are wholesalers. Understanding all of the components of each of those business types or those business models and highlighting where the typical pain points are so we know how to at least start that conversation with the client, I think that's really going to be one of our biggest factors of success.
What I'm hearing from you is that with this e-com offering, you know, there's a lot of ground where we can make up to improve the business, to add value, to create more revenue for the clients, but you are still going to be working hand in hand with the clients and working with them to, again, understand how to maximize margins and work through their inventory and logistics. So maybe explain a little bit more about how you see that dynamic working, about where we lend the most value and where maybe we can amplify the work they're already doing.
Yeah. So I think from the perspective that we're running media and doing these marketplace services, I think that there is a tremendous value in our being able to highlight additional insights for the media team that they otherwise wouldn't have. So in your typical media-only relationship, a client might come to you and say, I want to advertise these 10 items through this period, and I have this sort of budget. A lot of times, some agencies will just enact those campaigns and let them run. We'll look at that and say, okay, well, here are the listing quality factors of each of these detail pages. So they don't have the right amount of images, or their price is significantly higher than competitors in a commodity market. Understanding that that is going to impact the performance of the ads, similar to how, you know, if you don't control the creative, that can also impact the performance of the ads. We are now cognizant of that and pointing that out to the teams. But to answer your question more directly, Greg, and in terms of how we can specifically help brands, by looking into things that are typically not looked at, such as the operational side, helping them cut down on chargebacks for non-compliance, helping them increase their likelihood of resolving a dispute with Amazon, and helping them highlight from the sales side maybe additional promotional or merchandising opportunities that they haven't tapped into, we can affect top line and bottom line performance at the same time, which if both are increasing, you're going to see exponential net income growth.
And so I guess that's a good hand back to you, Elias, talking through the idea of, you know, Alex is focusing on that opportunity to make a purchase and all those obstacles to close the deal. And we have a lot of growth there. But meanwhile, we're still running paid media campaigns, which is historically what our clients engage us to do. How does the work that's going on within the social, within search, within the larger digital ecosystems that we manage kind of set Alex up for success? And how do we prime the pump for that exponential growth?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's about process. And one thing that's really unique about Harmelin is, you know, when we look at what the needs of a specific client are, we kind of sit down and create a roadmap to success for that client. So we have had clients come to us on the search side, for example, and say, look, right now we're driving leads, we're driving store visits. We want to pivot our campaigns to an e-commerce sales objective. We have these specific margin goals. We need, you know, a certain return on ad spend. How do we get there? So we have some experience in that area when it comes to helping to shift these campaigns to an objective where we're actively driving sales and then reporting back on those results, creating customized dashboards, et cetera, for these clients. So I think the infrastructure, you know, was already in place. The resources that you've provided us, Greg, with business intelligence, the reporting and analytics that Connor Elliott's team have provided us. So it's not like we were, you know, flying blind here as we kind of, you know, got this plane off the ground. But I think at the end of the day, it's about continuing to take that existing infrastructure, whether you're talking about the search team, social, SEO, and, you know, eventually it's going to be finding hires that fit in with those teams that have a more e-com specialized background, but there's also a training component to it. It's about helping those teams understand how to take their existing skill sets and mold them into, you know, a way that helps benefit our e-commerce clients. And that's certainly, you know, underway, but, you know, there's going to be a long road ahead to get us to exactly where we want to be on that front.
And so you bring up a good point here, and it's something I think that sometimes gets lost in this, is e-com in itself isn't a means to an end. The end is to increase sales. And so we've done some work together where we've looked at brick and mortar sales compared to e-com. And what I'm starting to see, at least, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, is that sometimes a sales problem requires e-com support, and sometimes it might not. Sometimes brick and mortar needs that attention, right? And consumer preferences are changing. We're going through this entire process in the middle of a pandemic, which has changed vastly how we go about our business. But I'm curious, Alex, what you kind of think of that space, of that dynamic between this is an e-com initiative. We need to really hone in on the e-com opportunity and make sure we maximize it versus, you know, we don't want to ignore e-com. That's certainly part of this, but maybe there's things we've learned from e-com that we can apply to other experiences. What's that interrelationship that you see on the sales dynamic?
You know, probably the best start to that would be to do the root cause analysis. And what are the issues that you're seeing? What are the objectives of the business, and kind of deciphering those little facets will lead you to whether or not this is a more brick and mortar or omni-channel or e-commerce type of effort. One of my favorite sayings that I took out of business school is you don't buy a hammer and a nail, you buy a hole in the wall. Like you said, Greg, the focus isn't necessarily to dive into e-commerce. The focus is to increase your sales. Even within e-commerce, like Elias alluded to earlier, are you going to be a wholesaler where your operations are already set up to be more efficient for shipping skids? And if you are going to be a wholesaler, which retailers are best for you? Are you looking for volume that you can tap into immediately, but you might be getting lower margins and going on the Amazon platform? Or do you have a more traditional set of online retailers that you're working with who still kind of mix and match the way that they would approach brick and mortar online? Are you dealing with Kohl's.com and Target? Or are you going the D2C route? And if you are you going to be drop shipping for retailers, or are you going to be running your own site? And the answers to those questions are really based in the motives and the pre-existing strengths of the company. So I know that was a more high-level answer than you were probably looking for, but that, you know, similar to all the models that go into driving sales on a single site, there's all these different factors that come into what your best fit e-commerce portfolio is. The good thing is Harmelin's understanding of that on every side of the aisle, omni, e-commerce, traditional, and our strategic approach put us in a good position to evaluate the business and decide which factors from which approach work best into almost a pro forma model.
Yeah, I think you hit the head there. It's never as simple as a single tactic to solve the problems. And it starts with that root cause and making sure that you have the breadth to affect all the areas. And sometimes that's working with the client to work on the areas maybe beyond our scope. And sometimes it's working across the agency to fill in gaps that we think could add value. You know, when we went through this, the naive perspective on this is that e-com is an opportunity to look at Amazon. You know, Amazon was moving into the advertising space at the time, still have. They're going to be a major player there. I think we need to acknowledge that. But while all this has been happening, Walmart's certainly grown their share, and they are just as major a player, if not, you know, more so in some aspects, in some areas. You have Shopify is a pretty dynamic player in this space. I'm curious, as we've seen this explosion in growth, how that shaped your perspective of the work you're doing, of the platforms you're engaging with, on the opportunities maybe in front of our clients. You know, this isn't just the Amazon solution, right? This is an online shopping solution that you're working through. So if you could elaborate a little bit on that, how do you see that shaping the work you do?
I think it's going to challenge us to become experts in all realms of e-commerce. And the reason for that is brands are wise now, and they know that they have to diversify their portfolio. If you are 100% on Amazon and you're in a commodity market, and 2 weeks from now, Amazon launches an Amazon Basics version of your product, what are you going to do, right? If you lose 80% of your market share on the channel where 100% of your digital sales are being derived from, you're in a lot of trouble. And so brands are recognizing that, and they're saying, okay, I'm going to put together a portfolio of retailers or marketplaces that I'm going to sell through that still fit my model. And what that requires us to do is to understand what are the levers that you pull to run optimally on Amazon, and how do those levers differ from Walmart, and how do those levers differentiate from being a wholesale vendor instead of a seller, and how does all of that come into play with making the decision to run your D2C? And that's not only from the media perspective, that's from the online sales perspective, that's from the user experience that you don't control when you're running a retailer site, because Amazon's got the UX department, to running your own D2C site and now being on the hook for making sure that your customers have an optimal experience. So in a very long-winded way of saying, we're going to have to know all of it because of the requirements. And it's not only that, but it's going to continue to expand, and we need to be on top of those trends.
And so, Elias, I'll throw it back to you on the build up. Like I said before, there's that optimizing the experience and capping the opportunity in these stores. Are you seeing more campaigns that maybe wouldn't have been considered an e-com campaign shifting towards, we need to grow traffic to our own storefront, or we need to grow traffic to these other retail partners that we have? How does that diversification of the storefront environment shift the other types of campaigns that we're running?
Yeah, so one trend that I've noticed, and this even kind of predates the pandemic, was, you know, really an internal battle between different sides of the coin at large retailers, where they're kind of looking at it and saying, you know, we traditionally have used X, Y, and Z model, whether it's wholesaling to big box retailers, whether it's D2C, you know, whether they were early on Amazon, on Walmart, on eBay, to trying to determine what's the best fit for their customer going forward. And, you know, you see a lot of pushback. So you might see a customer that says, we think that, you know, our customer is more of a Target customer than a Walmart customer. And maybe there's some hesitation to distribute their product on that platform. But to your point, Greg, as we see kind of an expansion of, you know, these traditional big box retailers into the e-commerce space, it becomes almost unavoidable in the sense that these retailers are looking at it and saying, you know, if Walmart is taking, you know, X percentage of market share projected in 2021, can we afford not to sell on that platform, knowing that there are going to be people that are strictly buying products online on Walmart? Conversely, as we continue the vaccine rollout, as we see more of a return to life as we knew it, I think there may be increased shopping interest when it comes to brick and mortar locations, strip malls, some of these areas that have been really hard hit over the past year. So it's kind of difficult to predict exactly where it will go. But I do think we've seen a bit of an accelerated timeline, as far as the so-called digitizing of the retail experience. And, you know, we know that our retail clients are definitively, you know, seeing this and keeping a very close eye on it. But there doesn't seem to be a cohesive direction that scales across retailers yet. Everybody is just kind of poking and prodding at it and trying to figure out, you know, what's the right move to make now to set us up for future success. And it's really on a case-by-case basis that we have to evaluate it and then, you know, make our best recommendation that we can.
So to kind of bring this to a close then, and to take your word there, before they talk to you, which is probably where I would start that root cause analysis, what's one bit of closing advice that you might give to an advertiser who is trying to figure out what comes next as things are starting to stabilize and we're getting back to whatever comes next? Is there one thing they should have in mind they should start thinking about before they really start to dive into an e-com focused strategy?
Yeah, I think it's got to be customer first, whether it's their analytics and reporting on demographics or any of the advanced data that these retailers collect. I think it's even simpler than that. Talk to your employees, talk to your sales teams, find out, you know, where are your customers' pain points? Where do your customers go to find products? And how can we get in front of them in the most efficient way possible?
Any closing remarks, Alex?
Just always think about whether you're paying or you're not paying, where you're sending the customer. Similar to if you walk into a store and there's things all over the floor and it's dirty and the people are rude, you would probably walk out and find another location. Don't make your detail page or your landing page a disgusting store where the employees are rude and there's product all over the floor.
Thanks to our two guests, Elias Shulkin and Alex Mandel. Media Impressions is hosted by Greg Ebeck and produced by Gwen Lufkin, Emily Wolf, Chelsea Fletcher, and me, Jared Rudenstein. Harmelin Media, named Ad Age Best Places to Work 2021, thanks you for listening to Episode 4 of Media Impressions.